Now there was a famine in the land. So Abram went down to Egypt to reside there as an alien, for the famine was severe in the land. When he was about to enter Egypt, he said to his wife Sarai, "I know well that you are a woman beautiful in appearance, and when the Egyptians see you, they will say, 'This is his wife.' Then they will kill me, but they will let you live. Say you are my sister, so that it may go well with me because of you, and that my life may be spared on your account." When Abram entered Egypt, the Egyptians saw that the woman was very beautiful. When the officials of Pharaoh saw her, they praised her to Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And for her sake, he dealt well with Abram. And he had sheep, oxen, male donkeys, male and female slaves, female donkeys, and camels. That story is one of the weirder stories in the book of Genesis. It is weird for a number of reasons, but one key reason is definitely that it is told three times, with strange variations. It is told when Abram and Sarai go down to Egypt, then a few chapters later, the same series of events play out when the same couple, now renamed as Abraham and Sarah, are in the land of Gerar. And then, the same story plays out all over again with Abram's son Isaac and his wife Rebekah. When stories get repeated like that, it is often an indication that the narrative is connected to some central concerns of a culture. When, for example, Hollywood starts churning out stories that all have the same plot, when every movie seems to be telling the same post-apocalyptic or superhero story with minor variations, that is an indication of what our society is concerned about or afraid of. But at the same time, each telling of the story has to be unique and connected to specific concerns in order to connect with its audience. The variations on the common theme are what makes it meaningful to people. So, I would like to retell all three of these stories in episodes, though not necessarily all one right after the other. And it all starts with a couple who went down to Egypt. This is Retelling the Bible. Episode 8.9, Sarai, the sexy sexagenarian. Sarai and Abram had been on the move for their entire married life. They had started off in Ur of the Chaldeans, and then traveled with Abram's father, Terah, as far as Haran. Then, after Terah died, they had moved on together, along with Abram's annoying nephew Lot, to Canaan. And in all their travels, Abram had done all right. He had managed to amass some sheep and cattle, as well as male and female slaves, to take care of them. but it was not as if he was entirely happy with his accomplishments. Abram felt as if he was something special. His God, a deity named Yahweh, had apparently told him so. And so he felt as if he was destined to be more than just a relatively wealthy nomad. But circumstances often didn't work in his favor. And then the drought hit. Canaan could be a very fruitful land, and certainly offered a great deal of pasturage for his flocks and herds. They started to grow strong and produce more young. But all it took was a bad rainy season, and things changed very quickly. As the grasses and bushes turned brown and died, and as the cisterns grew dry and the water in the wells went down, Abraham watched with dismay as his animals sickened and died or failed to produce healthy young. It was as if all his wealth was fading away before his eyes. But word soon began to spread throughout the land that there might be a place to look for hope. People were saying that despite the lack of a monsoon, the river in Egypt had not failed to flood, and the Nile Valley was bursting with grain and with grasses. If he could travel there, surely his wealth could be saved. But even as Abram began to make his preparations to head down to Egypt, he vowed to himself that this would not just be a move of desperation. He was tired of just getting by. It was time for Abram to get what he was truly due. He decided that this trip to Egypt would be the foundation of an enduring fortune that could not be wiped out by a change in the weather. The couple had been walking side by side down the road towards Egypt in silence for some time. Behind them, their malnourished slaves were driving along the poor remnants of Abram's once thriving livestock herd. Abram finally managed to get up the courage to speak to his wife about his plan. "Listen, Sarai," he began, "I think I finally have a plan that will make sure that we never have to deal with this kind of crisis again. You, my dear, well, you are kind of a hottie. You are about the most smoking babe in the entire Near Eastern world, whatever that is. And I think that it is time we tried to use this to our advantage." Sarai struggled to suppress a small giggle. "Oh, Abram, you always have been so cute with your schoolboy infatuation over me, but seriously, isn't it getting a little bit old now? You and I certainly are. You realize, don't you, that we celebrated your 75th birthday the day before we left Haran. And we've been wandering for, what, 2 or 3 years now? I know you think of me as your trophy wife, But I am only 10 years younger than you. Don't you think it's time to leave off talking about me as a haughty? Abram scoffed. Don't you shame me because I have a thing for older women. There is something really sexy about a mature woman. But I'm not just talking about my fetishes. I've been thinking that the Egyptians might be into the same kind of thing. When we get down there, I'm sure that they will notice just how beautiful you are. I'll bet that someone will want to claim you for their own. Maybe even the Pharaoh himself. Well, I'm not so sure about that, Sarai replied. But in the unlikely event that that happens, you'll just tell them that we're married, right? Right, Abram? Well, I was thinking something a little bit different. What if we were to tell them that you were my sister? Now it was Sarai's turn to be offended. Listen, I heard the rumors around the household about my mom and your dad, just like everyone did. But I never believed them. You said you didn't either. Tara may have loved me like a daughter, but he only ever called me his daughter-in-law. Let's not drudge that old stuff up again. No, listen, Abram insisted. I think we can make this work for us this time. Sarai rolled her eyes. But she had learned, by this point in her life, not to interrupt her husband when he got on to one of his schemes. Shortly after entering into Egypt, the couple did find themselves being summoned to the court of Pharaoh. Much to Sarai's surprise, the word of her extraordinary beauty had indeed spread the whole length of the Nile Valley. And Pharaoh, apparently, wanted to see this phenomenon for himself. And Pharaoh, it seemed, definitely did have a thing for older women and was ready to make a deal with this beautiful woman's brother. And what was Abram doing? Was he protesting? Or did he have a last-minute change of heart and actually admit to the Pharaoh that he and Sarai were married? Not in the least. He was busy haggling with Pharaoh's servants to try and get the best deal that he could. Making a bargain had always been one of Abram's greatest strengths. Why, it was said that he could haggle so well that he could get a god to cut down his price to as low as 10 of something. So, as soon as he saw just how interested the Pharaoh was in his smoking hot wife, he sprang immediately into action. He protested that he was very fond of his dear sister, and that it would be a great hardship for him to be separated from her. But maybe, just maybe, he would feel better if he were given 50 or 100 or let's call it 300 head of cattle It would go a long way towards making him feel better about losing her. Oh, and Pharaoh, you can't really give me that big a herd of cattle without giving me several dozen servants and slaves to take care of them. That would just not be very responsible of you. And so, in just one extended session of haggling, Abram somehow managed to amass to himself an extraordinary amount of wealth. Finally satisfied, he left the court, waving a fond farewell to his wife, who stood there rather stunned, her mouth hanging open. She did not quite believe what had just happened. Sarai was whisked away to the harem to be prepared for her wedding night. She was bathed, shaved, and styled in the Egyptian manner. Her face was painted, and her eyes outlined with the black kohl that was favored by Egyptian nobles of all genders. Only when the Pharaoh's senior wives were completely satisfied with her was she given beautiful clothes to wear. At the end of the day, when the Pharaoh retired to his bed, she was to be taken to him. Now, Sarai simply went through all of this in a bewildered state. None of it seemed real to her. She just couldn't believe that Abram could have placed her in this whole situation. Surely he would jump out at any moment and declare that he was only kidding, that it was some elaborate prank that he had put together with his new friend, the Pharaoh. But the more the day went on, the less likely any of this felt. As hard as it was to believe, apparently her husband had decided to sell her off in a get-rich-quick scheme. As she began to come to terms with this, she wasn't quite sure what to do with the rage that she was feeling. She was starting to feel as if she might just as well go through with this thing and do her best to enjoy it, if only to spite Abram. When she entered into his chambers, the ruler was immediately enraptured by such a beautiful and captivating woman. He rushed towards her as if he were a young man on his very first wedding night instead of his 100th. And Sarai, at this point, had steeled herself to just go through with this thing and get it over with. But just then, just when the king was about to get her final layer of clothing off, something happened. There was an urgent knock at the Pharaoh's chamber door. And almost without waiting, one of his high officials entered.
O Lord of the two lands, my God and my son, it is a disaster, and you must do something. The Nile River has turned kind of pinkish in color. The people are terrified, and you must save us.
A king's work is never done. What could the Pharaoh do but drop everything, including Sarai, who fell hard to the floor, and go out to coordinate the response? Sarai did feel somewhat relieved that she wouldn't have to go through with it all tonight. But surely this was not the end of it. I mean, she could hardly count on a plague to interrupt their lovemaking every night. Could she? The sad truth, as far as the Pharaoh was concerned, was that that was exactly what happened. The very next night, just as he was getting ready to make a move on his sexy new sexagenarian wife, he was interrupted with the news of another plague that had attacked the land. It was tadpoles this time. And so it seemed to go day after day. There was a swarm of mosquitoes one day, and fleas the next. After that, it was an outbreak of hoof and mouth disease among the cattle. And then there was an outbreak of acne, a deluge of sleet. After that, a double cohort of cicadas emerged from the ground to fill the entire land with the sound of their incessant chirping. And then the day after that, the sky turned a very dark gray. On the 10th day after his marriage, the Pharaoh had just about had enough. He knew that this would be a demanding job when he first took it on, but these interruptions were becoming downright intolerable. And when, as that day drew to a close, and he was heading to his bedchamber once again, only to be interrupted to respond to a plague of sickness that had broken out among all of the firstborn sons of all the leading families of Egypt, he was ready to give up. The next day, he didn't even wait until midday before barging into the harem, normally an exclusive female domain, with a demand that Sarai speak with him immediately. "I think I must be going crazy, Sarai," he cried. "It seems as if all the gods of Egypt have conspired together to make sure that I never bed you at all. I think I might just have to call this marriage off." At this point, Sarai had finally had enough. She had been feeling awful about this whole situation ever since the first night. She had seen all of the problems being caused by the various plagues and the suffering of the people of Egypt. And she had seen the king in action, seen the heavy weight of care he carried for his people. He seemed to be at least trying to be a good ruler. He didn't deserve any of this. As each day had gone by, she had felt progressively more guilty, for she felt certain that her own dishonesty had contributed to this situation. By this point, she could no longer bear it either. And so, Sarai tearfully admitted to the truth that Abram was her husband and not her brother. She also confessed her fear that all of the misery that had been visited upon Egypt had been carried out by the vengeful god of Abram, a deity named Yahweh, who she knew had a terrible temper. "I am so sorry, my Pharaoh," she concluded. "It is just so unfair that you should be dragged into this thing between my husband and me. I hope that you can forgive me." When Pharaoh summoned Abram to appear before him, he could not be more angry. He did not ask for any explanations. He didn't even give the man the opportunity to speak. "What is this you have done to me?" he cried. "Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is my sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and be gone." Abram was smart enough, as soon as he was dismissed from the court, to get out of Egypt as fast as he possibly could. He gathered his now substantial herds and his army of slaves and headed to the border in hopes that he would get there before the Pharaoh remembered the extraordinary price that he had paid for a wife that he would never possess. Only once the frontier had been breached and several miles of the highway had passed under their feet, did Abram finally breathe a sigh of relief and allow himself to relax. It seemed as if he had actually pulled it off. All this time, Sarai had trudged alongside him in sullen silence. So enraged was she at what he had done to her that she wouldn't even look at him. But just as they passed by the 10-mile stone on the way to Canaan, she just couldn't help it. "Well, husband," she sneered, "it looks like you might just have gotten away with your whole scam this time. But I hope you have at least learned something from all of this. I hope you never try to pull another stunt like this again." "What do you mean?" Abram asked incredulously as he looked around at all his new wealth. "Look what this stunt, as you call it, has done for our family. Listen, I'm no idiot. I know we could never pull something like this off in Egypt again, but there's got to be other places it would work. Am I right, Sarai? Am I right?" I know that Abram is supposed to be one of the heroes of the Bible, but I have a real hard time viewing him in a good light in this story. Yes, it is true that Abram does protest that he's going to be coerced, that he's afraid that the Egyptians will kill him because his wife is so beautiful. But he doesn't really act like a man afraid for his life after that. When the Pharaoh takes Sarai, Abram slips right into the role of a patriarch and negotiates himself a very nice bride price, turning himself into an instant millionaire. These are not the actions of someone being coerced. And I realize that he lived in an extremely patriarchal society in which women were merely property, but I cannot bring myself to admire him for his treatment of his wife as a commodity that he can sell off just because it suits him. And he lies. I know that in the second version of this story, Abram, or Abraham by then, does actually claim that Sarah really is his half-sister, the daughter of his father. But as far as this story is concerned, that is just not true. When Sarai is first introduced as part of this same narrative in the previous chapter, she is not introduced as the daughter of Terah, only as his daughter-in-law. The story seems to be an odd kind of foreshadowing of the more famous story of Joseph and Moses, with the famine forcing the family to travel to Egypt and the Pharaoh being persuaded to let them go through a series of plagues. These seem to have been intentional elements. And so, when I was looking for a way to describe the plagues, I decided to go looking in the book of Exodus. But since this is clearly meant to be a rehearsal and not the main event, I decided to tone down the 10 plagues just a little bit. As I suggest at the end, Abram has done pretty well as a result of this whole sordid affair. So why wouldn't he try it again? We will certainly see him do so in a future episode. That is it for this episode of Retelling the Bible. Please subscribe so you can get the next episode in a couple of weeks. The theme music for the podcast is Ah Da by Kevin MacLeod, and the mood music for this episode was The Zone by Sasha End. The music is licensed under the Creative Commons and can be found at incompetech.com and at filmmusic.io, respectively. You can contact me on twitter.com at Retelling Bible and on the Facebook page Retelling the Bible. Show notes for this episode have been posted at retellingthebible.wordpress.com. Thanks once again to my awesome Patreon supporters, whose support means so much to me. And welcome to new member Matt. Wonderful to have your encouragement. Go to patreon.com/retellingthebible to support this podcast. This is Retelling the Bible, and I have been your storyteller, W. Scott McCandless.